Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money. This is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells, usual co-host, and we have an interesting show today. First, I ought to tell you we are in for a pretty nice week. Summer is back, high of 78 today, into the 80s the next couple of days. So, Doug, we'll be able to get some more mountain biking in. It's not fall yet.
Got to get it in before Thursday, though, I hear. Thursday it's supposed to rain, right?
Thursday showers, 80% chance. So that wet pattern will be coming back. Well, let's talk about mountain money for this morning. We've got a good show. We've got an interesting lineup. And Gabriel Weinberg is going to join us first. He's the author of Traction, a startup guide to getting customers. And Doug, this was your recommendation. You've been hearing a lot about this book.
Yeah, it's really popular in the Bay Area where there's a lot of startups. And you know what, Larry? Having a better mousetrap is not enough. You've got to be able to sell those mousetraps, and that's what Traction's about.
Absolutely. So that will be our first guest, a startup guide to getting customers. And yeah, you can invent the Apple wristwatch computer, but you got to have people willing to buy it.
Yeah, if you don't have Apple's marketing machine, it can be tough.
So he will be on first.
And our second guest is going to be Sean Raskin, owner of Inspired Summit Adventures. If you've ever gone on a great hike here in Park City, you know how it can be good for the soul. And they've started a business where not only do you do outdoor adventures, but they've got a life coach that helps you appreciate all that and put it in perspective and help you be the type of person you want to be. And then our final guest is going to be Patricia Kempton, who's the owner of Welcome Mat Services. Most of us have been in Park City for a while, but if you're new, you've probably heard of Welcome Mat Services. They send out emails with various offerings and services to newcomers. So it'll be an interesting conversation with all three guests. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Heidi Gatch of Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is our community voice, and I greatly appreciate it. I've enthusiastically offered real estate services in Park City and Deer Valley since 1992. I can be reached at 640-0892 or at HeidiGatch.com.
This is Eric Lee, attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo. As a Park City resident for 20 years, I'm proud to support KPCW. Jones Waldo provides legal services to residents of Summit County in many areas. 435-200-0085, joneswaldo.com.
And welcome back to Mountain Money, and we have Gabriel Weinberg on the line with us. Welcome to Mountain Money, Gabriel.
Hi.
Glad to have you with us. Gabriel is the CEO and founder of DuckDuckGo, the search engine that doesn't track you. And Gabriel, we'll talk about that. That's interesting, too. But we're also going to talk to you first about your book, Traction, a Startup Guide for Getting Customers. You've started, prior to DuckDuckGo, another company, OppoBox. Am I saying that right?
OppoBox,
which you started up and sold, and you are in the venture capital business, an angel investor, and writer based in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. The book is Traction, a Startup Guide to Getting Customers, and we were talking about it in the introduction, and I guess the central point is it doesn't matter what great idea you have. If you don't have people who buy it and who buy it quickly, you don't have a business.
You are absolutely right. The common story is, you know, someone's got a great idea and they even are able to make it implemented. You know, they're able to make it work. But then once they launch it, they have no idea what to do, and then they run out of money. And unfortunately, the company dies. And the sad part about that is their product was often very good.
And the way you've gone about writing this book is to interview dozens and dozens of entrepreneurs who started up companies and made them successful. And did you find, what did you find in common across the board? Was there any magic bullet they all had?
There was definitely a pattern that emerged that we explain in the book, and that is that in any given, you know, growth cycle of a company, so especially when it initially starts taking off, it's usually dominated by one marketing channel. So all you got to really do is figure out one way to get customers sustainably, and then you're set. The problem is that there's 19 different ways we identified, and it's hard to predict ahead of time which is the right way. And so the method that we created here called the Bullseye Framework helps you find that bullseye, helps you figure out what marketing channel is right for your particular business at the particular time you're trying to do it.
You know, Gabriel, I think most people, if you were to ask them, what are different ways you can promote your new product? I think most of them would be hard-pressed to give you 8, let alone 19. When you started this book, did you think you were going to have a list of almost 20, or like me, did you think it would be a half dozen to a dozen at most?
I was much more like you, and that's why this was kind of interesting. And we approach all these things with bias, right? Because you and I would think of 8. They might be slightly different 8, but often they're the same 8. You know, I'm going to run some Google AdWords, or I'm going to, run some traditional advertising on the radio. But the reality is all 19 help get companies successful. And if you just go with your bias, what you think that 8 is, you might be missing out on the one that really is going to get you to take off that you didn't initially think about.
Yeah, you know, your book first came across my radar screen. I forget if it was TechCrunch or a site that I go to called Product Hunt that kind of shows the latest and greatest cool products out there. And I think one of the things that I found interesting about just the synopsis that I read was when they said you had 19 different ways. The book's worth the price of admission if all you do is think about some areas that may not be on your radar screen that could be the way that you're going to get that initial traction. Talk to us about that process, because in your book you mentioned that the way you get traction in the early days is going to be different for every company, but it's also going to be different for the same company in a later stage in their path. So talk to us how companies explore the different paths and find ones that work for them.
Sure. So DuckDuckGo, the company I currently run, the search engine, is a good example. You know, when we started, we were getting maybe 10,000 searches a month, and now we're getting 150 million. And so there's a lot of different growth, numbers in there. And over time, what worked for us initially stopped working simply because we outstripped the volume or it became too competitive. So, for example, we've gone through really 6 different channels since we started. We first did SEO. We tried to get people from Google to come to us by searching for new search engines. Then we were on social sites like Reddit. And then we moved to advertising in print and then TV. And now we're doing business development. We're going to be in the new version of Apple's iPhone and operating system on the desktop. And so each of those levels, basically it meant that things stopped working for us. We reached the point of diminishing returns that we had to start this process all over again, where we did this brainstorming step and then testing, and then ultimately found another channel that was driving our growth.
But on day one of a product launch, you have to go beyond, of course, holding a press conference and launching it. You have to have X number of those 19 techniques already rolling, right?
Yeah, I actually advocate starting this process right when you start product development. And there's a good analogy in the leaky bucket that really makes this point, which is, when you start making your product or service, it's a leaky bucket. If you pour customers in it, they're going to just fall out the sides because your service or product has a lot of holes in it, right? What you try to do is plug those holes through beta testing or getting some early customers in that are your friends. But unfortunately, that doesn't really identify all the holes because those people are too close to you and you've coached them too much. So what you really want to do is be testing, getting traction through some of these channels ahead of time. And that not only will help you when you launch figure out what to do, but also help you reinforce your product and service because it'll find those holes for you that you would not otherwise have found. You actually come to market with a much better product.
You know, I like your analogy, and I wanted you to speak a little bit to it. You mentioned in the book that the getting the traction, getting the marketing avenues open really complements and in many ways is very similar to this lean startup concept, which is out there, which is really you come up with the simplest version of your idea. You get it out there. and then you ask customers for feedback, and you're constantly iterating at small steps as opposed to waiting 2 years for this grand launch of a product. It's these small iterations along the way. How does that apply, that same concept apply to marketing?
Right. It's exactly complementary. So what lead startup is the product development, you know, traction is the kind of marketing or traction development. And really what happens is lean startup and that approach you just referenced, which is great, will really validate that your product is useful to someone. And that is obviously necessary condition for success. But what it won't do is tell you, okay, which market niche should I go after first? You know, how should I try to reach it? What should the messaging be? That's what this traction framework will do.
So let's talk about some of these 19 channels. We obviously don't have time to talk about them all, but one that gets a lot of attention right now, and I know companies are all trying to do this, which is how do you get people talking about your product in a viral way?
Got it. So my previous company, the one you mentioned at the beginning, was an early social network company, and we grew completely through viral. So I have a lot of familiarity with it. And what is kind of misunderstood about viral is it's not just people will spread it offline, which obviously everyone wants to do, and some of that will happen no matter what if you have a good product. But what viral really is baking what they call a viral loop into your product, where you are encouraging, as part of your product or services used, to spread the word, and you're giving incentives for people to do so inside the product. So a good example is Dropbox, which has taken this approach and been their main driver of growth. And that's that service where you get some space, some storage space, and you can use it for collaboration. And what they did to bake it into their product was, you know, if you refer a friend and they sign up, you both get extra free space on Dropbox. And so you now have an incentive to share, and your friend has an incentive to use it because they know you get free space too. And so that was built right into the product. As soon as they did that, it started taking off, and it's still their main driver of growth.
You know, most of the examples on viral that I hear are business to consumers. And obviously the reason I hear them is because I'm a consumer. What about business to business? We have a lot of entrepreneurs here in Park City that are marketing to other businesses. Is the strategy different for a business to business concept?
It's not different, but you make a great point, which is, you know, often the best channel is the underutilized channel because your competitors aren't doing it and you have kind of an open space. So a great example of business to business viral was Yammer, which was sold to Microsoft, you know, for north of $1 billion a couple of years ago. And what they did was, you know, they made this collaboration software in the workplace, and they would get one person interested in it. But to really get use out of the product and, you know, make the whole thing useful, you really needed to invite their colleagues to it. And that was built right into the product, and they really did take off virally that way. There's plenty of other business products that do that as well, where the key is really to bake it into the product.
So you say as soon as you start product development, you need to start figuring out how to get traction with customers starting on day one. But I would think still your main effort is at product development because you have to have a good product. Is there always a logical start point for the 19 techniques? Does it always become one formula?
I mean, I do think you want to start on day one because it really does influence your product direction. What we often see is companies who wait to do it, you know, when they hit the market, they then realize, oh, wow, you know, I can't market it this way. I really need these extra three features to really bring it to market. If they had started it, you know, early, they would have realized that earlier and not having to do an extra, you know, product development cycle. So it is a bit counterintuitive to start up from day one, but it's generally because you're spending less time on product and you have to build your product, like you said, but you actually will spend less time making the right product if you start this early.
Well, are there any classic examples of, and maybe we haven't heard of them, so they aren't classic, but classic examples of people who've spent too much time on product development and not enough on gaining traction, gaining customers. One famous example I remember early on in the internet was furniture.com, and they spent a lot of time figuring out a really cool website where you could have a couch and then you could click a button and put a different fabric on it and see what it looked like. And then they got ready to launch and checked freight costs and found out nobody can buy furniture online because you can't ship a couch and make any money on it. I mean, are there some other classic examples of things that flopped out of the box, not because it was a bad product, but because they didn't figure out the customer channel?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that is literally what kills most startups. Is they run out of money because they didn't do this early. But even the big companies now often mess this up. So we talked about Dropbox early. They didn't build the viral loop that initially took them off, right into their product from the get-go. They initially started trying to get traction via Google Ads and trying to get people to buy their software that way. And the problem was no one was searching for some service that could synchronize all my files because no one even realized they really had this problem. And until they had to really go back and do another product development cycle to bake this in, and then as soon as they did that, it started taking off. So that's a pretty good example.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because you mentioned that, it's the number one cause that startups fail, and I completely agree with that. But yet, that understanding, I don't think, is broadly out there. And I think your book is bringing up the conversation and bringing it the attention it needs. Why do you think here we are, what, the venture capital business really took off in earnest probably late 80s, mid 80s, so 30 years now? Why do you think we're 30 years into this and we're just now getting entrepreneurs to realize, hey, having a good enough product's not enough? And the way these products succeed is not simply by one article in TechCrunch and the world beats a path to your door. Why do you think it's taking so long to get this message out?
So it's really interesting, and this maybe gets a little nuanced, but when the venture capital industry started, and software in particular, which is where my expertise is, you could win a lot more having not understood distribution initially and on product and features because it was so hard to actually bring a product to market. So to put in perspective, even 15 years ago, it would cost you millions of dollars to bring a product to market and you had to get venture capital. Nowadays, so much off-the-shelf open source and other software you can use basically for free enables you to bring a product to market, on $50,000. So orders of magnitude less. And as a result, there's so many more startups and products, like you mentioned, product companies. Things are cropping up just to tell you about new products, right? The difference is that it's much harder to get noticed. And so part of the value shift has moved from product to distribution. And I think that's kind of the underlying shift and why it took so long is that there were just very few good products back in the day. And now there are way many good products, but it's much harder to get the word out about them.
Gabriel, your book Traction is kind of your what you do when you're moonlighting. You are mostly running DuckDuckGo, and this is a website I heard about at a cocktail party, I guess, and I was talking to a airline pilot. There's a lot of them who live in Park City, and he flies internationally, and he said, use DuckDuckGo as your search engine because then no one will know where you are. And what he uses you for is ducking upcharges on his, I think, Netflix or Amazon account when he's overseas. Tell us about the concept of DuckDuckGo.
So DuckDuckGo, you're right, that's my full-time day job. Is a search engine just like Google that you can switch to today and really kind of never look back. We focus on a few things that we think make an overall just better search experience. So privacy, like you mentioned, we don't track our users at all. And then we also focus on smarter answers. So more answers above the link just gets you information without clicking around. And also less clutter. We just focus on web search so we don't have to kind of push other services like Google does with Google Plus and other things. So just kind of a much cleaner design.
So DuckDuckGo doesn't necessarily mean you do nefarious things on the internet, but by not keeping search records of where you've been, you're not getting those targeted ads and so on. So how do you make revenue? How do you make money out of DuckDuckGo if you're not following people around the web?
You know, what's great about web search is you actually don't need to track people to make money, because most of the money is just made on that keyword you type in. So you type in a car or mortgage or something you want to buy, and we can show you an ad based on that keyword. Unfortunately, you know, Google, the biggest search engine, is really an advertising company, and they run, you know, four of the biggest ad networks outside of their search. So they need to track you across the web, and like you noticed, ads are following you around the internet now, right? All that is happening because they need to monetize the stuff that isn't the web search. The web search itself is easy to monetize, and so us just focusing on web search enables us to really deliver you a search experience without tracking you, which is, quite honestly, I did for personal reasons, because I don't want to be tracked. And, you know, it just makes business sense for us. It's a better user experience, and it doesn't impact the monetization.
Well, and from a business standpoint, too, and this is going to have to be our last question, but, you know, over the weekend, news came out that, you know, the NSA, if you do track, then the government can come to you and say, hey, we want those records. And I saw over the weekend that the government threatened to fine Yahoo $250,000 a day if they didn't release these records, while Yahoo's legal department was saying, hey, we're not sure this is legal. We don't want to do this. We're going to fight you on it. And the government said, hey, that's fine. But between now and then, we're going to start charging you $250,000 a day, which to me is really atrocious that unfortunately our government can do that. In hindsight, I'm curious, has the NSA come to you and said, well, there's got to be a backdoor, there's got to be a way to track? Has there been any conversation with the NSA, or have they basically left you guys alone because you don't track?
Yeah, we've pretty much left alone because we don't track, and that's kind of the line in the sand there, so we don't have any data that's useful. But that Yahoo story was quite amazing, and it was laudable that they went through lengths to make those documents available. You know, they've been fighting for, that was back in 2008, they've been fighting for years just to make those unclassified.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to see him. Well, Gabriel, we enjoyed our conversation this morning. Our guest is Gabriel Weinberg, and Gabriel and Justin Mars wrote the book Traction, A Startup Guide to Getting Customers. If you're an entrepreneur, if you're looking to increase revenues, I think it's a very important book. I read it this weekend. I learned a lot from it, and well worth the price of the book. Thank you, Gabriel.
Thank you.
And this is KPCW Park City, headed to a high of 78 today. 20% chance of an isolated thunderstorm. You can see it's quite cloudy out, so it's possible something will drop. When we come back, we're going to talk with Shawn Raskin. She's the owner of Inspired Summit Adventures. It combines yoga, Pilates, breathing, healthy eating, rock climbing, everything into a kind of a holistic package combined with some coaching. We'll learn all about Inspired Summit Adventures after this.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Chamber Bureau members enjoy a wide array of benefits, including instant credibility, weekly newsletters with relevant information, educational seminars, webinars, and much more. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
This is Ryan Hoffman, branch manager at Mountain West Bank.
And Brooks Harbertson, commercial lender, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW.
We offer several products and services for individuals and businesses, including deposit and loan solutions.
Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theater, 649-3369.
Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Interesting conversation with Gabriel Weinberg, author of Traction. In studio with us now is Shawn Raskin. She is the owner of Inspired Summit Ventures. Shawn, welcome to Mountain Money.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I mentioned in the opening that your concept is really you take people on these life adventures, and it's not just a great hike. It's not just a adrenaline rush, doing something fun. It's also how do you incorporate this into your life and make yourself a better person and closer to the person that you want to be. How did you come up with this idea, and how long have you been doing it?
So I this was a very organic experience coming up with the concept for Inspired Summit Adventures. I guess taking it all the way back to the beginning, growing up in New York, I kind of stuck out as a sore thumb.
New York as the, in the city?
Both the city and northern Westchester County.
Okay.
And so I was constantly rigging, climbing ropes out of electrical cord and, you know, getting into all
that can be dangerous.
Yeah,
don't
it
do
was,
that at home.
Yeah, it was definitely creative, to say the least, and hiking a bike through the trails locally that nobody ever mountain biked on. And so my mom called me the West waiting to happen. So fast forward about 18 years, I found myself in at the University of Colorado in Boulder doing real rock climbing with real ropes, learning the real technical skills. And then I ended up coming out here to guide for the Norwegian Outdoor Exploration Center in 2004, and then ended up working for White Pine Touring. And really, through all of this, I had always used the outdoors for my own inner peace, you know, to really commune with myself and really step up to my best self.
Yeah, I think a lot of us do that.
Yeah, I think that's how we all came here, right?
Right.
But when I was guiding with White Pine, I started having a lot of return clients. And my clients would often say things to me like, "Sean, I've really never told anyone else this," or, "I really have never felt so comfortable to have such an awakening. And I'm not only having these epiphanies when we're out on the trails, but I'm able to bring that home and use that strength or tap into my intuition better when I'm in moments of stress in my daily life back, you know, back in New York or Miami, LA, or maybe back in Park City." So, really, I started honing in on what was happening on that trail. What was I bringing to the table, and what were we creating together, and really getting specific with what that was. And so my first step was, well, if people are really looking to me for advisement, I better get some real credentials. So I became a certified life coach and started really honing in on tools and techniques I could share with them. And so we grew like that and started realizing that, you know, combining the outdoor adventure with that. So
you mentioned a certified life coach. What does a life coach do, and what does it mean to be certified as?
So that's a great question. So certification means that I've gone through the process of taking a course, learning all the many, not all, but many skills and tools and techniques in terms of intention setting and all different kinds of journaling and meditation tools. But further than that, you then have to go and have real life experience documented. So you have to have a minimum 10 clients that document where you document your experience with them. But beyond that, you know, I would say it's really just some you know, the certification is one thing, but the application is another. And I think that I've really had the ability to connect with people in a meaningful way and really get personal growth going for them.
So what services specifically do you sell a client? It's not just taking someone on a hike or having them climb a granite cliff or or a frozen ice waterfall or whatever. It's also a healthy lifestyles. It's yoga. It's a whole a palette of activity.
Yeah. So the really cool and exciting thing about Inspired Summit Adventures is that we offer these packages that are completely customizable. So let's say you show up and you want to go on a hike, right? Just a 3-hour hike. That's great. We can do that. And you're like, you know what? I don't really want that life coaching piece. I have that happen a lot. People are like, we're not really into the wellness coaching. Okay, that's great. Let's go on a 3-hour hike. But during that course of that 3-hour hike, I guarantee that, you know, and I know this from experience of pretty much all of my clients, they end up walking away with that wellness piece. Because just by being in nature and just by being with myself or one of my team members, we really elicit that kind of mindful exploration of
mountains.
You kind
of sneak it in whether they ask for it or not.
Well, you know, it's all different tools and techniques. And I think part of just being around myself, it's when you believe something so thoroughly and when it's so much a part of who you are, it's really easily contagious.
So, you know, the emotional aspects of this game of life are huge, right? I mean, I'm fortunate to work with some highly educated people and occasionally talk to people when they get out of school and they're looking to start a career. And I'm always struck by, you know, they've done so many things right, but oftentimes just emotionally, they don't believe in themselves as much as the outside world believes in them. And I think your experiences probably help people deal with some of that. What are some things that can help people, you know, kind of reevaluate and reframe a way that they've looked at their life that's taken a lifetime to get there? I mean, I imagine it's quite difficult to get people to reframe that.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite little sayings is, change I have to I get to, and really phrasing everything in more of, you know what, I get to go to work. I get to have a job. I get to be in a place where I'm able to make money so that I can afford to live in this house that I get to clean at the end of the day, you know? And just that quick little quip, that flip of I have to and keeping our heads to the ground and you know, framing things in terms of, you know, it's a chore, and really trying to embrace the gift of each moment, I think is a really beautiful practice. And it's a practice, right? It's not
appreciating gifts, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the problem in the United States and in towns, particularly like Park City, where there is a fair amount of affluence, is appreciating that gift. And I use a term called the grateful heart. You know, wake up every day and have a grateful heart for what you have. Mm-hmm. And it's a heck of a lot easier to have a good day, a good week, a good month, be the type of person you want to be if you're grateful for all the things that you have.
I think gratitude is the attitude, as they say, you know, and it's, again, it's something that, you know, I'm not saying that you come to me and I'm changing your life forever. You know, it's a practice. So our experience in the mountains, or with our Inspired Kitchen program, or with our half full and multi-day retreats, that's where the yoga, Pilates, and all that come into play. It's really a moment to step outside of your daily routine and take a deep breath and really refocus and recenter yourself to then take that experience and apply it back into your daily life and live through a bit more gratitude and a bit more perspective on our connection with nature and within ourselves.
So you just mentioned an Inspired Kitchen. What is that?
Inspired Kitchen is a program we launched in July. It is an intuition-based cooking class. It's really fun.
That's how I cook, with intuition. Uh-huh. Sometimes it turns out well, and sometimes
and
it
doesn't. And a glass of wine. Yeah,
absolutely, and that's all part of it. You know, and that was kind of born out of the whole holistic approach to, well, if we're physical in the outdoors, you know, I love to feed myself well. I choose to eat a plant-based diet and have a ton of fun cooking for friends and family. And I had some interest from my clients. I was bringing these little homemade trail snacks. And one of my clients was like, man, I would love for you to teach me how to do that. And with that, boom, Inspired Kitchen was born. And we've done several programs and people are really loving it. And that can be packaged with a mountain biking tour, or, you know, winter's around the corner, so I'm excited to take people backcountry skiing and snowshoeing. Come back and we'll make some really nice soups or stews, and a glass of wine is always a good way to cook.
It is plant-based after all.
Yeah. But, so we're really excited about Inspired Kitchen as well.
Well, Sean, we need to go in just a moment, but you're one of those people who came to a great place because you wanted to live here and take the lifestyle that's here, and you've made it a business. And congratulations to you for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Just one more thing I wanted to put in. I am offering Breathe Ski and Yoga Retreat March 4th through the 8th, which is an amazing all-inclusive yoga ski and yoga retreat with 2 days of backcountry skiing and two days of skiing at Deer Valley.
And so, people want to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
They can do inspiredsummitadventures@gmail.com, or they can call me, 435-640-4421.
And you have a website, inspiredsummitadventures.com.
Yep. And Sean, thank you for coming in this morning. I'm going to send you home with my copy of the book Traction, which talks about how do you get the word out about this great adventure that you're helping clients with.
Great. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate your time.
You bet. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Patricia Kempton about Welcome Mat Services, new business in town. After this.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Hello, this is Kristen Egan of Park City Realty Group, and I support KPCW. Every day, I listen to and especially appreciate local news and weather. This has helped me live, play, and sell real estate in the Park City area for the past 14 years. I can be reached at 435-714-1067.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. In studio with us now is Patricia Kempton. She's the owner of Welcome Mat Services, I mentioned at the opening. If you're new to town, you've probably heard of Welcome Mat Services. If you've been here 10 years like myself, it's been a while since I've gotten something from you guys. But Patricia, welcome to Mountain Money, and tell us what Welcome Mat does.
Well, Welcome Mat Services is a marketing strategies company, and actually, we just brought Welcome Mat to Utah just a few months ago. It started on the East Coast, so it's up and down the East Coast. So if anybody's moved from the East Coast, they might be familiar with Welcome Mat, and a lot of people confuse Welcome Mat with Welcome Wagon.
Okay, I was going to say you might have had a competitor here 10 years ago.
That's a possibility. That's definitely a possibility. But what Welcome Mat does is it connects local businesses, some of the best local businesses in the area, with new movers, people who've just moved to Park City. And we also cover Salt Lake, but they've just moved here, and they're a unique sector of the market because they're looking for, actively looking for new businesses to become loyal to. And that particular group is also five times more likely to become a loyal customer because they're really open-minded and they need everything. I don't know when the last time you moved was, but...
Fortunately, it's been about 10 years. I don't like moving. But before that, I moved like 12 times in 10 years, so I wasn't too happy about all that moving. And you're right. When you move to a new town, you're looking for ways to connect. And a service like this is, I would imagine, very helpful.
It is. And quite frankly, you know, 10 years ago when I moved here, I needed everything. And I'm sure you did, too. You moved 10 years ago as well. And my family needed a vet. We needed a new dentist, a doctor. We were actively looking for what restaurants are the good restaurants to go to, you know, so that we could recreate what we had where we moved from and find really good businesses to frequent. So what Welcome Mat does is we seek out the best local businesses in the area, and those businesses can become a part of our program. And new movers, when they move in, will get a welcome kit or a welcome package, I should say, sent to them via regular mail. And inside that package are gift certificates. They are, you know, real gift certificates, not like coupons or advertisements. They're gifts from the local businesses, like the dentist, I think, is offering a free teeth whitening kit and a free first exam. The vet is offering a free exam for your pet. They're really good offers.
Right. So it's not a personal, like the old days of Welcome Wagon, where there's a basket, but everybody's, you know, and a knock on the door, and it's the Welcome Wagon lady. But it's similar in that it is introductory offers to get you to find the services you need.
Right. It is similar in that way. I think it's a lot more efficient than actually going door to door. You'd be surprised to know that there are 147 new movers on average each month to Park City.
I am surprised to hear that.
Wow. I know. That's a huge number. Whenever people hear that number, they're like, really?
Well, we just had folks from the Park City school system in, and apparently, you know, all the new movers is creating an issue there. So it was a big number. I forget what it was they talked about this morning.
But with the kids, sure.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, there's a lot more people moving in here than most of us locals think.
There are. And also about, since World War II, about, I think it's 17% of the country have moved on average each year. I think it's like 13% to 17% on average. You're looking at, you know, one in five people move typically. So businesses are losing customers and people are, you know, coming in. It's a constant cycle. But so it's not like 147 are coming in and nobody's leaving each month. Yeah. But yes, and that covers renters as well as home buyers, and those are families. So when I say 147, it's not just individuals.
Which brings up a good point. We're about to have a lot of seasonal workers coming in. Do you also target the seasonal workers?
Well, we target all new movers, but we try and average out. If there's a spike one month and it goes way high, we'll try and average out those movers. So we're not necessarily targeting the seasonal workers. We're more targeting the long-term residents, people who are moving here that plan
Which
on
is
staying.
Who I think would be the target audience for your business.
And how do you find out who's new in town?
Well, that's the secret sauce.
That's our secret sauce.
Installation.
No, actually,
like
we draw our data from 36 different sources, and we cross-reference those sources. And some of those sources are top secret. We don't share that information, but it's a very accurate list. And there's, you know, a technical aspect behind the whole thing as to how we get our accurate mover list, but it's not as simple as somebody just going down to the town hall or pulling, you know, records from the county or anything like that. It's definitely more high-tech.
Because a lot of those records would be confidential. And this is a franchise.
It is.
And is this something you would have difficulty just setting up on your own? Is the franchise providing some of that secret sauce?
Yes, the franchise does provide the secret sauce. I'm not the one who's drawing the data from the 36 different sources. They do that, and they provide a lot of help on the back end. They actually do the printing and the mailing. And the other thing that we do is the gift certificates that we send out are individualized. Here, I could show you some. You can take a look. They are specific. They don't just say dear new resident or dear current mover. They are actually two individuals. And we put QR codes on each certificate that can be traced to the individual who is redeeming them. And we ask the businesses to save those certificates, and we scan them for them. They collect them, we scan them, and we can give them data reports so you can actually track your ROI, which a lot of other money mailer type things or mass saturation marketing mailers can't do. So this is a lot more high tech and personalized. And our packages have a 90% open rate, which is very high, because when you move, it takes a while for junk mail to catch up to you. and so, you know, your mailbox is pretty empty in the beginning, and everything that's in there is typically important. So people, after they move, will open our envelopes, especially when it says that these are gifts to them.
And there's some nice offers. So if you do get one in your mailbox, go ahead and open it up, because I just looked through it and there are some nice offers.
And of course, the business model is that you are charging everybody who is presenting an offer, and that's your revenue stream.
It's a subscription service, yes. So the businesses that work with me are charged a fee, but it's very reasonable, and the service typically ends up paying for itself with all the new loyal customers that the businesses get.
Well, great. Well, Patricia, thanks for joining us this morning. Our guest has been Patricia Kempton. She's the owner of Welcome Mat Services. Patricia, if a business in town says, hey, this sounds interesting, I'd like to get a hold of you, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can get me by email at pkempton@welcomematservices.com, or they can call me at 435-658-2228.
Very fine.
Patricia.
And Doug and I are going to be back to wrap up Mountain Money by talking about the Vail acquisition of Park City Mountain Resort. There's a lot to chew on there, Doug.
There is.
And we'll chat about that after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longrimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery, we know what grows, ParkCityNursery.com. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. And we wanted Doug to save some time here at the end so that we could talk about the Vail PCMR discussion. You know, I was out of town, and we can discuss a little bit about why I was out of town. I was at the Marconi Awards at the National Radio Show, where KPCW was one of five finalists for the Marconi Award for Non-Commercial Station of the Year. And we did not win the Marconi, but it was an honor to be considered one of the top five.
Huge honor.
Non-commercial stations in America, a very high honor indeed. And there was a big gala in Indianapolis where this took place. And while I was there, with social media, I was tweeted and called and Facebooked and emailed about.
Who'd you hear about it first?
About six times within a minute, and
really?
Of course, first I heard from KPCW and a quick email blast, and you know, in Park City, really, this is where you hear about those things first, and that's one thing I took away from the radio show is that people say, you know, radio is a legacy media and it's dying and da-da-da-da-da. No, there's still no other immediate source of local information other than radio.
And local is the key.
And local is the key. And that is radio's path to survival in the face of iHeartRadio and Pandora and all these other new music sources that are out there is none of them can tell you that your hometown ski resort just got sold.
Well, and you know, playing the music's the easy part. Putting the reporters on the ground and covering the story and having the relationships where you get the news out almost immediately, that's the hard part and the expensive part, and a job that KPCW does a great job. And I think the Park Record does a great job too.
Absolutely.
That said, it's twice a week that it comes out, so the two complement each other nicely.
Well, the two now compete very strongly in social media because the Record, of course, is busy posting and tweeting, as are we, and those are both real-time news reporting sources. In that sense, we compete head-to-head, but in terms of the actual product, a newspaper is still a twice-a-week source, and we can jump on the second we get in front of a microphone.
So there is some new information that came out now that a publicly held company has bought PCMR. So Rob Katz, the president of Vail, came out and said that he thinks Vail in the next 12 months is going to increase their essentially cash flows, the term he used was EBITDA, by $35 million in the next 12 months.
And the only change is acquisition of this
just
resort.
From PCMR. Yeah, he was very clear, just from the PCMR acquisition. So, you know, it's we live in a very special town that's done a great job of marketing itself, and you see the results of that.
And I was catching up over the weekend from every source I could find, and on Forbes Business.com, you know, the leading business magazine in America. They were just flat out saying Park City is America's leading ski town. And, you know, having lived here, it's kind of for 34 years, it's kind of snuck up on me as to how big the Park City brand has become. And I always think of Aspen as America's ski town, but even Forbes magazine is saying that it's Park City. And really, when you think three ski resorts here, another four within 45 minutes to an hour drive, home of the U.S. ski team, so many of the winter athletes at the Sochi Games saying they were from Park City. This really has become the leading ski town in America.
It has, and I think the town itself plays a key role in that, as does the community, right? I mean, we've got historic Main Street. It's a fun town to be in, and it is an accepting town. You know, during the holidays, it gets crowded. We all get a little, you know, anxious because it takes longer to get from point A to point B. But I think as a town, we're a very friendly place, and we're very accepting of the folks that come to visit. And people get that, and they enjoy that. And that's part of the ambiance that I think makes this whole town and all three ski resorts so special.
And you know, Vail moving in now with two-thirds of the skiing terrain in this town. Vail, big public ski corp, they're here for good. I mean, you can't predict 100 years out, but certainly they are here to be the long-term player. They are not flipping Park City. This is now a huge centerpiece of their ski corporation going forward. So I think in terms of investments, you're going to see a lot of investment in Park City Ski Resort, Canyon Ski Resort. There are something like 400,000 square feet of approvals in place at the base of Park City Mountain Resort. I don't think those bare ski parking lots are going to remain bare, flat pieces of asphalt into the future. I think there's a huge opportunity Vail has to develop that. There's been talk of a convention center, and that was just the logical place to put that. I mean, you can speculate all day, but one thing Vail does when they move into a new area, and we learned this from when we did some research when they moved into the canyons, is they maximize their assets. So they don't consider summer and off season. They're building huge summer businesses at the resorts and year round businesses. So I think we're in for a tremendous growth cycle.
Yeah, no, I think it's exciting. It's bittersweet too, I have to say. You know, it's kind of the end of an era, and the Cummings family has done a lot of really great things for the town as well. But I do think the future looks really good, as you say. You know, Vail is a healthy, profitable company that's not only willing but eager to invest in their properties, which I think benefits the town.
And you said they paid $182 million,
correct?
And their stock jumped
$400 million in valuation. They're what's called market cap increased by $400 million. So not a bad pop for that initial.
So that's just a huge endorsement from the financial community, from investors who think this was a very smart acquisition that will feed Vail's bottom line.
You know, I think what investors are thinking is this is one of the premier properties in the entire country, and it was a unique set of circumstances that allowed Vail to buy it. It wasn't on the market, as we all know, and it was a unique opportunity that led Vail buy PCMR.
Indeed. So we're all epic. We're all epic now, I guess, unless you know, there's some bitterness by some people who say I'll never ski there. But really,
and there will be, and I think over time we'll get there.
You know, and really, where are you going to ski? This is two-thirds of the terrain in Park City on our side, and interconnected. That is a tremendous value proposition. Well, I want to for a skier to buy one ticket and have this whole ridgeline available. I want to thank our great sponsors, Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, the Park City Chamber, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, and Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough. And Doug, we had a great lineup of guests. I especially enjoyed Gabriel Weinberg.
Yeah, me too. And I know we've got a couple seconds left. I want to on air thank Beth Fratkin for lining up the author of that book. He's a very hot, his book is very hot right now, Difficult Guide to Book. And Beth, thank you for getting him on board.
And also Sean Raskin and Patricia Kempton, thanks for coming in. That was Mountain Money. This is KPCW Park City.